Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Inbound coming on the baseline. Giroux runs the baseline. A bounce into the corner. It's scooped up in the corner. There will be no foul. And the Cougars claw their way to the Final Four for the first time since 1984. 67-61. Houston is back on the biggest stage. The Final Four sees a Cougar return this weekend with a six-point win over the Oregon State Beavers.
Now, the magical ride came to an end for Oregon State, but as I mentioned at the top of the show, look, they say all good things must come to an end, but I think this goes further than that. The run in the tournament may have come to an end, but that was a gift that Oregon State men's basketball provided for so many, myself included. Now, you can take things away from that gift far beyond just the run to the Elite Eight. John Canzano is the host of The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano. Of course, a newbie in for JC today, but JC joins us in transit as he returns from Indianapolis and the site of the Beavers' stunning run. John, you mentioned in your column on Oregon State the loss last night. You got a text from an NBA scout at halftime when it was 34-17, and he said, if this was a fight, they would stop it. It was a KO, and yet the Beavers found a way to crawl back into the game. What did you see?
I mean, I think anybody, and I think your comment right at the top is dead solid perfect. I mean, it was an amazing run by a team that nobody saw coming, and I was in the Chicago airport earlier this morning making my transition to come back to Portland, and there were a lot of Beaver fans. Jonathan Smith, Oregon State football coach, and his son were there in the airport. They had gone to the game. They had kind of flown out on a whim, bought the airline tickets, and you know, everybody wanted to see it and be part of it. I think people who were home did the same thing. Whether you were a Beaver fan or a Duck fan or just a casual observer, is an amazing story. And I heard it over and over in Indianapolis that people were like, this is what college basketball is about. It's about great runs. And you know, for them to fight back into the game shouldn't have been surprising. You know, talk about, this was a team that entered that Elite Eight game having won six in a row and 9 out of 10. They, you know, the point spread in that game last night, I think it was 7 or 8 points. They, you know, they cover the spread for the seventh straight game. And I think if they don't give up 19 offensive rebounds, I texted with Wayne Tinkle this morning. I said, you know, I think if you give up 15 offensive rebounds instead of 19, you probably win the game. But they exerted a lot of energy just to get back in the game, just to scramble back to even with about two or three minutes to go in that game. I mean, they just – the Houston bench, after Oregon State had tied the game, Kelvin Sampson calls timeout. Two of the players in the team are arguing. You have a coach who's bickering with one of the players about blowing a defensive assignment. Sampson doesn't look happy. At that point, I kind of wondered if Oregon State, all they had to do was get the lead, and I think Houston might have melted down, but Oregon State just couldn't get a good shot when they needed it down the stretch.
How about the 1-3-1 zone that Tinkle deployed? To me, it was reminiscent just of, you know, Wayne himself had a huge role in this team's success, just deploying the right defenses at the right times, because they played a lot of different defenses, and that really kind of got them back in it.
Yeah, it did. And it was really interesting to see, you know, he utilized a really athletic, smaller player down in the low post. And at first glance, you would think that's problematic. But when you've got Roman Silva sort of sitting, you know, top of the key, or at least free throw line, center of that zone defense, you got a 7-footer in there. And Houston didn't have great size. That was the other thing that really struck me. For a team that rebounds that well, they didn't have a player that was bigger than about 6'5", 6'6", on the floor. And, you know, I was it, you know, right down behind the basket where Houston was on offense in the second half. And you could feel the momentum shift in the building. You could feel that Oregon State has a chance. And I think if they play that game 10 times, I think Oregon State wins about four of them. You know, I think Houston's probably the better team, but I think Oregon State was not very far away, Judah, from getting to a Final Four.
I can't, you know what, I'm still shocked. I know you said it's not surprising that they got back to in it in the second half, but John, I took a break at halftime. I washed some dishes, I cleaned the kitchen a little bit, and I was just telling myself, probably out loud actually, I will take it if it's a single-digit game in the second half. That's it. If they at any point get within 10, I'd be happy.
Can you come watch a game at my house? You can wash the dishes, you can clean the kitchen, you can you know, whatever you need to do at halftime. No, but you're right. But wasn't that game sort of like a metaphor for their season? In December, they were terrible. In January, they were a little better. February, they were pretty good. And in March, they were great. I mean, last night, I was kind of watching it. If you segment that game down into four segments, they were terrible in the first half. And then they got a little better coming into the – they cut it back to 13, and all of a sudden it was 10, then it was 8, and then and I was kind of clock-watching. And, you know, we had talked on yesterday's show about the pressure. And if the game could be a single-possession game inside of a few minutes, what would Houston do? Because Houston has had some meltdowns. I really do think that the two possessions where Oregon State comes out of a timeout and shoots an air ball, and the other possession where Ethan Thompson dribbles down and kind of gets tangled up with a player and falls to the ground. I think if they, instead of, you know, everybody wants to make the big shot, but, you know, as a friend of mine who's really tuned into basketball said yesterday, he said after the game, he told me, he says, you know, everybody wants to make that big shot, but, man, you first have to maintain possession before you take the shot. That Oregon State late in that game, maybe for the first time since the beginning of Las Vegas and their big run, that was the first time I saw them look a little rattled down the stretch.
What do you think this means for Wayne Tinkle going forward? Because, look, I mean, I'll be honest, I said it on the show earlier today that he said a lot of people doubted us earlier this year, and I have my hand raised. I was like, Coach, I doubted you. Yep. You know, there are moments so many people did doubt, and to think that he's in a position now where he's definitely going to get some type of financial reward and extension out of this, but I'm also reading Nick Daschle's piece, your coworker at Oregon Live, covers the Oregon State beat, saying that Tinkle forgoes $450,000 in contract bonuses because of pandemic cutbacks. Can you lay out for us what you know and kind of what your insights are on his future, like financially speaking and contract speaking at Oregon State?
Yeah, let's go back to December. On this show in December, Scott Barnes makes an appearance. Oregon State had just lost to the University of Portland. I ask him, you know, what are his expectations? What does he need to see? He starts talking about Wayne Tinkle in a way that any coach in America would be, you know, a little nervous about. And it was a sign from Scott Barnes, the athletic director, that if things didn't turn, he was going to make a change. I mean, I'm reading the tea leaves, but I really do believe that if Wayne Tinkle had not turned the season around, he would have been fired probably sometime around the conference tournament. I don't even know if he would have been able to, you know, be the coach of this team of the conference tournament. So Scott Barnes was essentially saying, I'm disappointed. I need to see progress. At that point, Tinkle's got 2 years left on his deal. Because they win the Pac-12 tournament and they go to the NCAA tournament, he gets an automatic third year. So now he's got 3 years. But every coach knows you can't recruit players and tell them, hey, I need you on campus for 4 or 5 years if you don't have 4 or 5 years on your deal. So now I'm looking at Scott Barnes, and I talked to him yesterday, and I said, what are you going to do? This is before the game. What are you going to do with Wayne Tinkle's contract? Feels like he needs to be extended to 5 years minimally. What are you going to do there? And he's punted and said, look, we've agreed to put this off until after the season's over. Well, now the season's over. Tinkle's agent and Barnes are supposed to be talking. Scott Barnes says that, you know, Wayne Tinkle is Oregon State's guy. My sense is that Wayne Tinkle is not looking for more money. I think he's looking for more years, more job security, and I think he wants to be at Oregon State long term. And without question, once you've been to an Elite Eight, in the wake of that, if you're Oregon State, you need to give Wayne Tinkle an extension here that is a vote of confidence and helps him recruit. It's really interesting that, you know, today is typically a day where everyone decompresses and we start looking about, you know, wow, look at the momentum. How fun was that to cover this team? You know, we've done it in other years with the Ducks when they've played deep in the tournament in men's and women's programs, of course. But with Oregon State today, Wayne Tinkle's recruiting. Like, he's out trying to find the next piece. And it, I think we're going to see a record number of players in the transfer portal. They're already there. That's going to be a story that you're going to read about between now and the Final Four. I can tell you nationally, all those national writers, Pat Forty, Pete Thamel, they're all asking questions about the portal. They expect that there could be more than 1,200 players that jump into the portal across college basketball. So I think you're going to see a ton of movement. You're going to see a bunch of players jumping around. What Oregon State's administration can do right now to help Wayne Tinkle is extend the guy, give him the full five years, add two more years to his deal, make him happy, make him your guy for the foreseeable future, and let him help him recruit.
John Cazzano joining us here on the BFT en route home from Indianapolis. JC, you know, I do hesitate to do this a little bit because I want to just be grateful for what we just witnessed and keep it at that. However, there is a part of the conversation. You got to cast the vision forward. You're mentioning it with Wayne Tinkle's future in Corvallis. But in terms of expectations, do we dare talk about expectations going forward for this program? Because once you've reached an Elite Eight, that, you know, whether implicitly or explicitly, that's probably going to be somewhere around there, or at least making the NCAA tournament, making a Sweet 16. It's probably going to be the internal standard, at the very least, that Wayne Tinkle will hold himself to and hold his program to going forward. But from your perspective, covering this program from the outside in and where they stack in terms of relevance in the local conversation, what should the expectations be going forward for the Beavers?
I know what they're thinking and they're talking about. They're talking about trying to be a tournament team in most years. And I think that's a good, you know, I think that's a good barometer for them, or that's a good baseline saying, look, we can be one of the five Pac-12 teams that gets into this tournament every year. You know, you don't have to get to the Elite Eight every year, but every once in a great while, that would be great. But literally, I think that their run in the story that is Oregon State Athletics, you talk about the Fiesta Bowl team, Jonathan Smith at quarterback. You talk about Pat Casey's national championships in baseball. You talk about Scott Ruick taking a women's program to a Final Four. And you talk about this Elite Eight run, and you decide, like, what is the greatest accomplishment in there. But it's in the conversation that, like, this is one of the best things that's ever happened for Oregon State Athletics. So I just think what they're thinking about right now, what they're trying to capitalize on, is they're trying to say, look, it can't just be an Elite Eight run. Can we parlay this into better recruiting, pick up a couple players? Certainly America got to meet Wayne Tinkle. It's charming. Program had charm to it. It was, you know, a 12 seed in the Elite Eight, and the Pac-12 really shining. It just such a nice moment for Oregon State, and such a nice moment for the conference.
You mentioned the Pac-12 shining. One of the questions I'm posing around the room and to callers today is, what is your one shining moment of Beaver basketball in this tournament run, JC? Is there one moment or one visual that you will take away primarily from when you remember this Oregon State run?
I think when they beat Loyola Chicago, I was inside the arena. It's at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. It's a real basketball feel to the building, and you're in, you know, the Hoosier State. Here's Wayne Tinkle. You know, the players after they beat Loyola Chicago did not run around the court and do snow angels like they did after winning the Pac-12 tournament. They acted like they belonged. And Wayne Tinkle took off his warm-up jersey or his sweatshirt that he had on, or whatever, the pullover he had on. He pulled it off, and his shirt underneath was that homemade shirt that his family made for him. And he pounded his chest, and he pointed to the initials, his father's initials on his sleeve. And it was just really an emotional thing. And I took video of him as he walked off the court. He was going to an Elite Eight, and pinch yourself. Like, if you know, Oregon State was going to the Elite Eight in that moment. And for me, that was the shining moment. You're not going to see it on the CBS broadcast, but it was like Oregon State belonged in that moment, you know. And how about our state? Oregon State in the Elite Eight, the Ducks men's program in the Sweet 16, the Ducks women's program in the Sweet 16, and Oregon State's women's program gets to the second round of the NCAA tournament. And if it weren't for a really tough matchup against a one seed, maybe they make the Sweet 16. I thought 8-4 record for the men's and women's programs at Oregon and Oregon State. Pretty good march for our state.
That is fantastic. The Pac-12 narrative, though, you know, everybody's saying, hey, Pac-12 is a lot better than people gave it credit for. Is there a chance that we're overreacting a little bit based on just like the recent history here? Or in your mind, do you think, hey, as a conference, especially in men's basketball, but maybe in the other sports, who knows, the Pac-12 does kind of get the short end of the stick?
I think so much of reality is perception. Perception is reality. Those are interchangeable things. We didn't have a tournament last year, so we don't really know. You know, would they have done this a year ago? Would this have been the second straight year where they got multiple teams to the Elite Eight? You know, we don't know that. But the brand of this conference was beat up so bad from not getting to the college football playoff 5 out of 8 years and not getting, you know, a couple of years ago, they didn't even win a game in the NCAA tournament. So the brand was broken. And one of the things that the conference office, I think, does a horrible job at, terrible, horrible, rotten, lousy, no good job, they don't tell the story of the conference's programs very well. They're terrible at it. They're not branding. They're not marketing. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, but during this tournament, it was Andy Enfield. It was Nick Cronin. It was Wayne Tinkle. It was Dana Altman. They were doing the talking for the Pac-12. The coaches, I thought, did a really good job of banding together in the post-game news conferences, talking about how good the conference was, and that wasn't accidental. I think they talked to each other and they said, look, we have to tell our story. We're here. Let's be the one that brands the Pac-12 as a good basketball conference. And you have two teams still in it. You have two shots to get to the Final Four tonight from the Pac-12. They're already at $36 million in shares for this tournament. It's a record for the conference. They can push towards $40 million if they can get a team in the Final Four.
Wow, that is awesome stuff. Last thing for you, JC, USC Gonzaga, who do you like?
I'll tell you this. Every time, you know, I've covered for 25 years, I've gone to the NCAA tournament, and I've covered 9 Final Fours. Every year when I'm in the tournament and covering teams in the early rounds, a team will jump out at me, and I will see a team on the court, and I'll just go, wow, like that's a team that could win. And they pop. And you know who's popping right now is USC. And last night I thought it, when I saw Oregon State and Houston play, neither one of those teams to me felt like they could win the thing when I look at them. I think Baylor's playing really well, obviously. Gonzaga is the team to beat. But don't sleep on USC. They have the talent. They have the length. I think that's going to be a hell of a game. It might be the best two teams, and I right now, as far as how they're playing, USC and Gonzaga, I think that is a heavyweight fight. That's like Usain Bolt in the 100-meter dash, like all eyes on that game. And the other team that I really like is Michigan. So I think your national champion is either Gonzaga, USC winner, or Michigan, and I think that's how it plays out. I like Michigan to beat UCLA, but USC Gonzaga is a prize fight, and I think do not be surprised if the Trojans win that game.
He is on Twitter at John Canzano BFT, on the Instagram at John Canzano. Don't forget about that. Good follow there as well. And the host of this show, John, thanks for taking the time, and we'll look forward to hearing you back on the air on the show noon to three tomorrow.
Yeah, have some fun. I appreciate it. And, you know, it's so much fun for this state, I think, to have teams that are successful and a lot to talk about.
It really is. It really is. Thanks a lot, JC. Appreciate
All right, take
you, man.
Care.
Yeah, there he is, John Canzano. He'll be back on the air tomorrow. A lot to unpack there. We'll do it and talk a little more. Zags USC. And you can join the conversation as well at 503-417-7575. Newbian for Canzano on the Bald Faced Truth. If you missed the appearance by John Canzano on his own show, be sure to find it on the podcast. Subscribe, rate, review, wherever you get your podcasts. It is made available to you. One thing we didn't get to, and there's so much to get to, one thing we did not get to was the fact that Oregon State did basically get kicked out of their team hotel after the game last night, and they had to fly overnight. They arrived in Corvallis around 4 in the morning, and apparently there is a rule, and I think it's just for this COVID year and the bubble, etc., but if you played a game before 7:30 at night, then you also have to, and you lose, then you have to leave that very same night. That's the rule. But apparently the word from inside Oregon State is most of them didn't know that rule, and you obviously don't tell your own team to pack in case you lose. Like, that's not a strategy you use. So it's a harsh rule. It's a rule nonetheless. Most of the Beavers didn't know that was the rule. But that was the reason why.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.